America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington. Just want to inform our listeners we've been having some technical problems today here in Washington. Thanks for listening to us. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, 4 Kenyan students were killed and 4 more injured when suspected Al-Shabaab terrorists attacked a primary school. And the United Nations Special Representative to Libya has slammed foreign powers for violating an arms embargo by backing the warring factions in Libya. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The United Nations reports intercommunal violence in Sudan's West Darfur state has killed and injured scores of people and forced tens of thousands to flee their homes. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Fighting erupted between Arabs and the Mazalit, an African indigenous ethnic group, at the end of December in and around West Darfur's capital, El Geneina. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says the violence has taken a heavy toll. It reports at least 54 people have been killed and 60 injured. It says 40,000 have been internally displaced and thousands of others have fled to Chad in search of refuge. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says the displaced are sheltering in schools and government buildings around El Geneina. He says UN agencies and local partners are providing essential relief. He says the hospital is open and several health clinics are being set up to help those in need of medical care.
The situation in the affected area is currently calm and appears to be stabilizing, while UN agencies are carrying out water trucking, distributing soap and helping waste collection from the displacement sites. Other relief include food distribution and nutritional support to children, as well as distribution of mosquito nets, blankets, sleeping mats, and plastic sheeting.
Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency says an estimated 3,700 Sudanese refugees have fled to Chad from West Darfur over the past 10 days. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahechit says most of the refugees are women and children. He tells VOA the arrivals report fleeing their homes due to violence. He describes the conditions for the refugees in Chad as dire.
Most of the arrived refugees are staying in the open. They are staying under makeshift shelters. There is very little protection from the elements that they have right now. Food and water are obviously urgently needed, and health conditions are extremely worrying. Or urgent response is needed.
Mahechit says the Sudanese refugees are scattered in several Chadian villages along the border. He says UNHCR teams currently are monitoring the situation in 10 of those villages. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At least 4 Kenyan students were killed and 4 more injured when suspected Al-Shabaab terrorists attacked a primary school in Garissa County near the border with Somalia. The Kenyan military says they killed 2 of the attackers as they tried to blow up a telecommunications tower. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan police say Al-Shabaab terrorists attacked Seredo Primary School in a remote village in Garissa County early Tuesday morning. Charles Owino is a Kenya police spokesman.
About 12 Al-Shabaab attackers attacked an area called Sareto. Sareto is within Dadaab sub-county, Garissa County, 25 kilometers from Dadaab center. And they killed a teacher and 3 other persons, a total of 4 people.
Owino says one child was killed and others injured in the attack. He says security officers fought off the attackers as they then tried to destroy a telecommunications tower with improvised explosive devices.
And they attempted to destroy the telecommunications Safaricom mast around that place. A patrol caught up with them and shot and killed 2 of them, and we recovered 2 AK-47 rifles, and some IEDs that they had planted at the telecommunication area.
Al-Shabaab militants launched frequent attacks in northeastern Kenya near the border with Somalia. The Islamist group wants Kenyan troops to leave Somalia, where they have been helping African Union forces battle the militants. On Sunday, the Islamist group attacked a military base in Lamu, Kenya, that hosts US and Kenyan counter-terrorism forces, killing 3 US personnel and damaging several aircrafts. In one of the worst attacks in 2015, Al-Shabaab gunmen stormed Garissa University, killing 148 people, most of them students. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Cameroon says 10 Nigerians were killed Monday when a grenade exploded near a market on the two countries' border. Authorities denied local media reports of suicide bombings and said the explosion was caused when a Nigerian boy found a grenade and was playing with it when it detonated. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Mijiyawa Bakari, says Monday's deadly explosion was on El Bayd Bridge, linking a border market that spans both Cameroon and Nigeria. He says a Nigerian boy found a grenade and was playing with it when it detonated. Bakari says the 10-year-old boy found the explosive device in a heap of debris near the bridge, which links the Cameroonian town of Fotokol to the Nigerian town of Gambaru. The boy apparently thought the grenade was a piece of scrap iron that could be sold, he says, but the device exploded in his hands, killing the boy and 8 other people on the spot and wounding 30 others. Bakari said Cameroon's military and rescue workers rushed the wounded to a hospital in Fotokol, where another victim died from wounds. He said all those killed and 25 of the wounded were Nigerians, while 5 were Cameroonians. Local radio stations had reported that 2 female suicide bombers with the Islamist terrorist group Boko Haram were responsible for the explosion. But Bakari dismissed the report as unfounded and said Cameroonian officials have kept Nigerian authorities informed about their investigation. The governor said they were probing the origin of the grenade and whether it was from a military or Boko Haram. Cameroon's military says it's been more than a year since it had large clashes with the terrorist group, but abandoned weapons and explosives are sometimes recovered in areas of previous fighting. Military spokesman Serge Cyril Atongfak Gemo says locals should always report when suspicious objects are found.
Le dispositif sécuritaire à double volet, fixe et mobile.
He says the large presence of Cameroon's military in border towns with Nigeria, in spite of falling attacks by Boko Haram, is to protect civilians, especially schools, markets, houses of worship, and popular places. The military is detecting and rapidly destroying all dangerous objects left behind from years of fighting, says Gemo. 8 Cameroonian soldiers were killed along the Nigerian border in February 2015 by a mine explosion. The United States has helped train Cameroonian troops to detect and dismantle landmines and explosive devices. While military clashes are less frequent, Boko Haram still targets civilians along the border. In December, the militants, disguised as traders, attacked and killed at least 50 fishermen on an island on Lake Chad, which borders Cameroon and Chad. At least 20 of those killed were Cameroonians. The United Nations says Boko Haram's 10-year insurgency has killed over 27,000 people in northeastern Nigeria alone and displaced 2 million, while the conflict spilled across the border to Cameroon, Chad and Niger. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Almost half of Zimbabwe's population is food insecure, a worsening plight they have carried with them into the year. As climate change takes its toll, Zimbabwe has been under a dry spell, putting a damper on hopes that the next harvest will change the tide. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi speaks with the World Food Programme to get a better understanding of the situation on the ground.
Nils Bolzer is World Food Programme Deputy Country Director and Head of Programme in Zimbabwe. He says WFP is anxious about the growing food crisis.
We at the World Food Programme, we're very worried about the situation on the ground. We have about half of the population, or 8 million people, that need assistance during the lean season. The lean season really starts in January, the peak of the lean season, and lasts until the next harvest is expected sometime around March, April.
He says this is usually when most people run out of their previous harvest. Bolzer fears the lack of rains in Zimbabwe may prolong the period in which Zimbabweans will be food insecure.
If we look at the 2019-2020 season, the rains have started late in many areas, and we've already seen a number of dry spells. And if we listen to the experts for the prediction of this current agricultural season, it's not looking good. So it's quite likely that we have to extend our assistance in areas where we see that there is limited to no harvest.
He adds that WFP may have to start early to provide assistance for this year's lean season and continue the aid longer. Bolzer says the country's economic woes have a bearing on the situation.
So that's a very worrying development, and again, combined with the economic challenges that we're facing here in the country, we're likely to be in this for the long run, so for 2020, probably throughout the year and possibly beyond.
He highlights the efforts to alleviate the situation.
Out of the 8 million people, WFP, the World Food Programme, we are planning on targeting 4.1 million people during the peak as of January. And for that to happen, however, we need an additional $200 million as soon as possible.
Unlike in the past, rural communities have been most affected during droughts, but urban centers are also affected. About 2 million of the 8 million food insecure are in urban areas. The economy continues to decline. High inflation has put basic commodities beyond the reach of many. Bolzer says WFP's vast programs include supporting smallholder farmers with inputs and linking them with the market for their produce. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The United Nations reports intercommunal violence in Sudan's West Darfur state has killed and injured scores of people. At least 4 Kenyan students were killed and 4 more injured when suspected Al-Shabaab terrorists attacked a primary school in Garissa County. And Cameroon says 10 Nigerians were killed Monday when a grenade exploded near a market on the border between the two countries. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Isabel dos Santos, the billionaire daughter of the former Angolan president, says an Angolan court's order to freeze her assets is politically motivated. She spoke to VOA Salem Salomon via Skype. Salem has the story.
None of our companies received a notification. We were not aware that there was any processes going on at all. So really, there was no due process.
Dos Santos is the eldest daughter of Angola's long-serving president, José Eduardo dos Santos, who stepped down in 2017. She has been called Africa's richest woman, whose net worth, according to Forbes, is about $2.3 billion. She's now the target of an anti-corruption campaign led by her father's successor. Her portfolio includes a 25% stake in the Angolan mobile phone company Unitel, 25% stake in Angolan bank Banco BIC, and other interests in cable television, a supermarket chain, and another bank. She says the government's actions, rather than combating corruption, are going to hurt thousands of people. Upon taking office, President João Lourenço, a member of the same political party as her father, known as the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, or MPLA, pledged to root out corruption in the country. Last month, a court accused Isabel dos Santos and her husband of causing the state to incur more than $1 billion in losses through a scheme that involved two state-owned companies transferring foreign currency abroad and never being repaid. But dos Santos denies the charges and believes the move amounts to a politically driven effort to target her family. While she did not specify the size of the assets involved, she said the freeze will affect thousands of employees.
I'm very concerned about it. My main reason of concern is because this has a huge impact on many, many companies. And these are private sector companies. This is thousands of employees. These are daily operations, things like supermarkets that have to open every day and sell bread, sell milk, things like bank agencies that have to open every day and deliver, you know, cash services to our clients.
Isabel dos Santos is not the first member of her family to face legal scrutiny. In 2018, her brother, José Filomeno dos Santos, was arrested and accused of trying to steal $500 million while he ran Angola's sovereign wealth fund. He was freed last March, but is facing a trial before the country's Supreme Court. In a September speech at the Council on Foreign Relations, Lourenço said the country is determined to root out corruption in order to restore citizens' faith in government, as well as create a more favorable business environment.
Consideramos que os níveis de corrupção em Angola atingiram níveis insustentáveis. A diferença que existe é que, num passado recente, ou seja...
Corruption has reached very alarming levels. The difference is that in the recent past, corruption existed, but was not fought there, was a state of impunity. But today, the situation is not the same, which means corruption is being fought and is being fought in a very courageous way.
Other observers applauded the decision to target dos Santos' family, saying it sends a signal that no one is above the law. A journalist and researcher, Rafael Marques de Moraes, told VOA's Portuguese service it's a great lesson for current leaders who continue to think that justice will only hit a few. But dos Santos denies she is part of a system of corruption or patronage from her father's years in power. She said she never served in government or played a political role in the country. The closest she came was as part of a team of business people who helped rescue the national oil company in 2016 when it was $20 billion in debt.
I'm just a businesswoman. I'm an entrepreneur. I work in 60 countries. I work in South America. I work in Asia. I work in Europe. You know, and I work in technology, so I don't work with government contracts. I don't work with public funding. We work in private competitive businesses.
Dos Santos added she supports the anti-corruption campaign, but believes it is being used to target family members of the previous president in the run-up to internal elections for the leadership of the ruling MPLA political party. Dos Santos also pointed out that Lourenço held a number of leadership positions prior to becoming president, including Minister of Defense. She said between 2017 and 2019, he issued $3 billion worth of government contracts without putting them out for public tender, a competitive bidding process. She said this shows he's part of an old corrupt system in the MPLA party and not the reformer he claims to be.
For me, it's just the way the political party works, the MPLA works. It's the continuing of the MPLA tradition. And I regret to say, I feel that very little has changed.
She said, rather than view this as proof that no one is above the law, the measures will serve as a warning to other Angolan entrepreneurs, and she worries that this will be used as a political weapon.
I'm very concerned for the future. I'm very concerned that if these kinds of measures can be just arbitrarily put on someone from the private sector, then it could be me today, but it could be anyone else tomorrow.
I'm Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Special Representative to Libya has slammed foreign powers for violating an arms embargo by backing the warring factions in Libya. The UN's Ghassan Salami demanded Monday that international groups keep out of Libya. He said hundreds of thousands of foreign mercenaries are arriving in the country. Salami spoke shortly after Turkey announced it would send troops to the North African nation to support the UN-backed government in Tripoli. On Sunday, rebels under General Khalifa Haftar claimed the capture of the coastal town Sirte. Turkey's rival, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates support Haftar, including with drone strikes. The UN Salami said one of Haftar's foreign backers carried out the Saturday airstrike on a Tripoli military college that killed dozens. A UN report says Sudanese militia also fight for both sides. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I am Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in Africa news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.